Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers, debt for the people, right after this. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce, and your government gets 60%. That's $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and go out and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year. And you're going to net 25%, and the government will net 75%. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's 8% more net take-home pay. You produce 100% more, and you get 8% of that. Isn't that just real special? That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order a free general law CD package? That's the place to start. And let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it'll answer many of your legal questions about taxes and why we pay so much and get so little in return. And let me show you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, which is available now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, if you'd like to order that free general law CD package, just call direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or you can go onto our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, last time we were reviewing a paper here I got from J. Richard Niemela. I guess that's the way you pronounce his name, N-I-E-M-E-L-A. And you can probably get a copy of this. It's fairly recent. If you just go to R-I-C-N-I-E-M-E-L-A. Can you get that down? R-I-C-N-I-E-M-E-L-A at earthlink.net. And the subject matter is 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that'll blow your mind. And it blew my mind, so I thought I would report on it in the context of a book written by Sheldon Emery some years back called Billions for the Bankers. Now, last time we finished number three. I did number one, talking about the 75% of the people who are employed by the 42,400 factories that have closed in this country since 2001 are now unemployed. That's more than 15 million people. Dell Incorporated is going to spend $100 billion in plant building, but they're going to do it in China, and that Dell is going to close the last manufacturing plant that they have here in the United States next month in November. 900 jobs will be lost. And then number four, in 2008, 1.2 billion cell phones were sold worldwide. That's a bunch. Oh, my God. You know, there's 7 billion people in the world, and 1.2 billion, that's one person, more than one person out of every seven worldwide bought a cell phone in 2008. That's amazing. 1.2 billion cell phones were sold worldwide in 2008. So how many of those were manufactured here in the United States? Out of 1.2 billion cell phones manufactured in the world and sold, how many do you think were manufactured here in the United States of America by Americans? The answer is zero. Not one cell phone was manufactured in the United States of America. Isn't that just special? Number five, according to a new study conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, if the United States trade deficit with China continues to increase at its current rate, the U.S. economy will lose over 500,000 jobs this year alone. And so, number five, in a study conducted by the Economic Policy Institute, the trade deficit, that's the difference between the amount of money or the amount of goods and services that we trade with another country. It's called your trade deficit. Well, we Americans buy a lot from the Chinese, and the Chinese buy a lot from us. But the Chinese sell to us three times more than we sell to them. And as a result of that, there's an imbalance in our trading. It'd be kind of like you and I, and we're doing business, you know, with one another. And then I'm trading with you, and you're trading with me, and I'm trading with other people too, but my trade balance with you is I sell you $2,500 worth of goods, but you sell me $10,000 worth of goods. So when it's all said and done, I owe you $7,500 more at the end of the month or the end of the year than you owe to me. So we don't have a balance in our trade. And because of that, we Americans are going to lose about another 500,000 jobs this year. Now let's extrapolate that out. That would be another 5 million jobs over the next 10 years. Same period of time we're talking about Dell Incorporated, you know, over the next decade. They're going to spend $100 billion over the next decade, and they're going to spend it in China. Nothing has been done. Nothing has taken root here under Barack Obama, George Bush, or Bill Clinton. In fact, these three presidents, and they're not the only ones, because remember, it was at the beginning, or right at the end of the Jimmy Carter administration that I told you, the Small Business Administration offered little Georgie Gordon here $500,000, not millions now, just $500,000, which was double the amount that my company was ever worth at any one time. And I had to ask myself, why in the world would the government want to loan me twice as much as my business is worth to induce me to move my 30 jobs out of the United States to Mexico? So this offshoring, this outsourcing, has been going on at least since 1978 or 79. I suspect it was probably going on before then. But now it's a 500,000 jobs a year. And that's just to China. I don't know how many jobs we're losing to the Philippines, Bangladesh. I told you in the last program about the breaking up of ships. Nobody breaks up ships in the United States of America. There are no shipyard workers in this country that are in the business of breaking up ships. And they all go to Bangladesh now or someplace else. Number six. As of the end of July, the U.S. trade deficit with China had risen 18% compared to the same period a year ago. Not only are they selling us three times more than we're selling them, it rose by 18%. Got that? 18% in 1 year. That's why we mentioned in the last program, hey, this is unsustainable. It isn't going to go on forever. How long can it go on? Another month? Another week? Another day? Another year? Another decade? I don't know. I'm not a prophet. But can you see, boys and girls, that isn't going to go on forever? Now, the other day, there was a little story came out, and somebody was mentioning this national debt. And our national debt was up to $13.6 trillion, I believe it was. And this lady said, I don't believe it. And I don't believe it for a minute. The national debt was paid off by Bill Clinton when he was in office in the 1990s. Now, I don't know where this lady's been over the last 10 years. And maybe she knows something that I don't know. And maybe the Republicans have lied to me and totally deceived me, but the last time I picked up a paper or saw some numbers come across my desk, the number was over $13 trillion that our national debt had grown to, and Bill Clinton didn't pay off a dime's worth of that national debt. Not a dime. There's some bookkeeping tricks used to make it look like the debt had been reduced, but that was a bookkeeping trick. That wasn't reality. But here's my point. Remember I said in the last program, I said, I'm not sure that voting is going to solve your problem. Boys and girls, that lady votes. You have an electorate out here of dim-witted ignoramuses that vote. And that lady's going to cancel my vote out. And I think that there's another one out there going to cancel your vote out. And that's why I said in the last program, I said, you know, I think we got to have a solution for me and for you and other people that's totally outside the political and economic spheres of influence here in the United States. I don't believe that we're going to stop exporting jobs. I don't believe that we're going to stop closing our factories at the rate of 10, 12, 15, 20 a day. I don't think that's going to stop. I think it's going to accelerate. And then there comes an ultimate end to this. You know, at some point in time, there'll be a conclusion. I pointed that out in the last program. I said, you know, test it. The next time you're coming up to a 35-mile-an-hour curb, speed up to 70. Test it. See if that sign really means what it says. See if it's sustainable. Can you sustain your speed at 75 miles an hour? Hell, maybe I'm dead wrong, but my gut reaction is that you would probably be better advised to slow to 35 or at least 45 or 55 or something. You know, make some kind of an effort. Number seven, the United States has lost a total of 5.5 million manufacturing jobs since October of 2000. Now, that's manufacturing jobs since October of 2000, 5.5 million. 42,500 factories since 2001 and have closed their doors here in the United States. Now, it's true that 10 million people went out and found another job. Now, what we're doing here is we're taking our jobs that pay $15 an hour, exporting those to China, and then you and I are left to take a job that pays $7 an hour minimum wage doing something else. Do you think that that's good policy? And is that what you want to do? Is that the objective that you had in mind? It's working well for China. We have employed, the last time I saw a number on this, China has put more than 100 million people to work since Richard Nixon went over there in 1972. They have created employment for 100 million people in their export industries, exporting to us. I think that's wonderful. My God, I'm happy for the Chinese. But at the same time, we have unemployed 10 million Americans, and I just wanted to throw that out there for your consideration. It's nice to help your neighbors, and I'm not opposed to helping the neighbor. But do you think that you ought to impoverish yourself in the process? If you do, stay on the course that you're on because you're already a 100% success. If you have some reservations, maybe you might want to think about changing it. Number 8, according to tax notes, between 1999 and 2008, employment at the foreign affiliates of U.S. parent companies increased an astounding 30% to 10.1 million. During that exact time period, U.S. employment at American multinational corporations declined 8% to 21.19. Okay, now let me just cover that one again. That's number 8, and this is one of those facts that blow your mind. In a 9-year period, well, let's call it 10, 1999, if it was the whole year 1999 and the whole year 2008, employment at foreign affiliates of U.S. parent companies, that's where, let's say, Boeing Aircraft Company has an office in London, and their business is growing in London, or their business is growing in China, or their business is growing in Bangladesh, and they employed 30% more people. But during the exact same time, they fired 8% of their staff in Seattle, Washington. How do you like that? So work is growing overseas for these multinational corporations, and it's shrinking in the United States, which is why in the last program I suggested something like this. I'm not opposed to United Airlines buying an airplane from Europe or some other place, but I think that the Boeing Aircraft Company, if they're going to employ people in Singapore and China and the Philippines, I think that if they want to sell airplanes in the United States, that they should employ American workers to build American planes to sell to American companies. And if they can sell their airplanes to France or Germany or someplace else, that's great. And I think the people in France and Germany, if they can sell their airplanes here in the United States, I think that's terrific. But I think that our industries in the United States should be protected from those sales. Now, it used to be in the United States that we didn't have an income tax, but we financed our federal government. Here's the way we did that. If the people in France wanted to sell a bottle of wine here in the United States, we would require that they pay our federal government a tax to support our federal government. And at the same time, it would raise the price of the French wine to something more than the wine that we make and sell in this country. We never said you can't buy French wine. We just said you cannot bring French wine in here and undercut domestic wine producers by selling it for less. And in the process, you and I didn't have to pay any income tax. It financed our federal government, and it prevented this very problem that we're facing today. You see, our businesses, as I mentioned in the last program, I said the Stanley Company, paying $10, $15 an hour, they have to get $12 when they sell a 25-foot contractor's tape. The Chinese pay $2 a day, and they can produce those tapes a lot cheaper, and they can sell them here for $3.65. So that the Stanley Company can't compete against that kind of competition, and so they picked up their shop and they moved to China so that they can produce their tapes for $2 a day labor and sell them back in the American economy again. But the bad part of that is that the people in Stamford, Connecticut that used to work for Stanley are now unemployed. Now, that's not good for our guys. It's good for the Chinese, and God love them, they probably need the help. And as I said a little earlier, now are you really sure that you want to impoverish yourself to make the Chinese more prosperous or wealthy? And if you do, well, then stick with the program because you're on a winning course. But bear in mind that these companies now are hiring people at a phenomenal rate in these overseas countries. In fact, the General Motors Company, of which now the taxpayers own 80% of it, they have moved their entire Buick division to China. From now on, Buick automobiles are going to come from China, and it's going to be a very profitable line. They're projecting that they're going to make buku bucks off of that. But no American is going to manufacture or participate in the manufacture of Buick automobiles. The Chinese are. Now, I find this kind of bizarre. You and I, the American taxpayers, were asked to loan General Motors money so that they wouldn't go bankrupt, so that they could move their Buick division to China, so that they won't have to pay $20 an hour to American workers, and they can pay $2 an hour or $2 a day to Chinese workers to make the same Buick automobile and sell it back to us here. You mean we have to subsidize the Buick division of General Motors in China at our expense and then lose our jobs in Detroit to accomplish that goal? Boys and girls, are you really sure that's what you want to do? That's what you have done. I'm just asking the question, is that really good for you? I don't see any benefit in that kind of a program for me, and I don't want to participate in it. Even if you wise people out there can see all these great benefits for little Georgie Gordon, count me out. I don't want to participate. I'm out. Let me sit over here on the sidelines and watch you successful people get rich. Number nine. In 1959, manufacturing represented 28% of U.S. economic output. In 2008, it represents 11.5%. Got that? It's dropped from 28% to about 12%. It's a little bit more than half. And that's quite a drop, don't you think? One half. Our economic output is down by half. Well, now, if we had that kind of economic output in this country, if we said to the Chinese, hey, you want to sell big screen TVs in the United States? That's fine. We don't have any problem with that. But we got Motorola over here, and we've got other manufacturers that are American manufacturers like Zenith. There are no American manufacturers of television sets. We invented the thing. And now we have allowed the rest of the world to take over, and we buy television sets. I don't understand why we want to buy television sets from China and Japan and other places, but I guess we do. So all of you unemployed people out there, why don't you sit back and shut your mouth. Shut up. I mean, isn't that what you want? It would seem like to me that before we would let the Japanese sell one television set in the United States, that we would set an import tariff on the television set so that they have to bring it over here and sell it for at least the same amount of money that Zenith and Motorola have to sell it for, and maybe just a little bit more. Then if you want a Sanyo television, that's fine, but you got to pay a little bit more for an import than you do for one that's made here in the United States. And then that would support American workers, and they in turn would have the money to buy your products. But we decided for whatever reason we didn't want to do that. So our manufacturing, which represented 28% of our economic output, has now dropped to about 12%, less than half. Ford Motor Company, number 10, Ford Motor Company recently announced the closure of a factory that produces the Ford Ranger in St. Paul, Minnesota. Approximately 750 good-paying middle-class jobs are going to be lost because making Ford Rangers in Minnesota does not fit in with Ford's new global manufacturing strategy. Now, I don't blame Ford for wanting to move their manufacturing plant to China, just like General Motors moved their Buick division to China. It makes sense. It makes all the sense in the world. But it doesn't make any sense for you and I. Now, remember, Chrysler and General Motors said, we're going to go bankrupt, and if we go bankrupt, you're going to lose a lot of jobs, so you better pony up your taxpayer dollars and save us, and we did. And now the reward that we get as taxpayers. And then remember, you people working here for the Ford Motor Company, you 750 good-paying middle-class jobs that are now going to be terminated. They took your tax dollars to bail these companies out, not Ford, but the other two. And so the payback that you get on your investment is that the Chinese are going to take over those jobs. I don't think I need to pay for my destruction. I think I can be destroyed without me being a part of it. You know, if you want to destroy me economically, I think I'm going to let you do that. And I'm going to work as hard as I can to prevent you from doing that, but I'm sure as hell not going to pay you to destroy me economically. So that's why I just said to you a minute ago, I said I'm going to drop out of this game. Number 11. And as of the end of 2009, less than 12 million Americans worked in manufacturing. The last time 12 million people in America were employed in manufacturing was 1941. Boys and girls, we have the same number of people engaged in manufacturing in this country as we had in 1941. And we have a population that's double, more than double, what we had in 1941. And we're not just losing, we are being smeared. It's like a football game. It's not that we're losing, 24-18. We're being smeared, 56-0. And my suggestion would be tariffs. My suggestion would be, let's go back and do those things that we were doing in 1941 that made us the number one manufacturing country in the world. And I don't mind the Chinese competing, let them compete, but you can't compete here. That's all. Let me give you an illustration. The Japanese are free to sell their automobiles in America and build manufacturing plants here, but Americans are not free to sell their automobiles in Japan. That's right. Wake up and smell the coffee. The trade deals that our officials have been embracing over the last 50 or 60 years don't have anything to do with a level playing field. Now, remember, Americans don't know these facts, and I'm just sharing them with you, not because anybody's going to change anything here, But I already changed. I said, you know, years ago, I'm not going to participate in this program. I dropped out. Number 12, in the United States today, consumption accounts for about 70% of our gross domestic product. Of the 70%, half of it is spent on services. Now, services, that's where you go to McDonald's and you buy a hamburger. That's where you go to H&R Block and he fills out your tax return. Services. As opposed to the Harley-Davidson company that manufactures hard goods, you know, like motorcycles. Or General Motors or Ford that produces an automobile. Now, we should have got wise to this because years ago they started, these auto manufacturing companies, started putting sub-assembly plants in Mexico. Well, every time that you have Mexicans making the dashboard and the wiring harnesses in Mexico and then shipping those to the United States, it makes good sense for Ford, and I don't deny it. It doesn't make good sense for American workers, and you're the people that are voting for it. Now, you have voted these politicians in, Republicans and Democrats, for 60 years, and they, in turn, have taken the bribe money. We call this in this country here campaign contributions. They took the bribe money, and they voted in the policies that would enable Ford to move their plant to China and cancel those 750 jobs in Minnesota. But it isn't in the best interests of Americans. There are minorities for who it's in the best interest to. For instance, a trillion or two or $5 trillion bailout for the banking industry made all the sense in the world for the bankers. I would be the last guy to deny that. But it doesn't make any sense for the other 300 million Americans out here to finance a small clique of multi-billion and multi-trillionaire bankers because they're losing money or because they've made some bad deals or because they've got an agenda that they want to fulfill. And God love them, they're entitled to their agenda and they're entitled to their opinion and their political ideologies, but why do you want to support that at your expense? Evidently, Americans do, and they have, they are, and they're probably going to continue to do that. But I thought I'd bring this to your attention in case maybe you have decided that you'd like to back out. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Billions for the Bankers, a little book written by Sheldon Henry back in 1982. And I thought I'd preface that a little bit by giving you some of the problems that we're facing here. Written by Nymela, J. Richard Nymela, N-I-E-M-E-L-A. If you'd like a copy of it, why don't you get online, go to R-I-C-N-I-E-M-E-L-A at earthlink.net. You're looking for 19 facts about deindustrialization of America that'll blow your mind. Blew mine. So I thought I'd blow your day, too. All right, number 13, the United States has lost a whopping 32% of its manufacturing jobs since the year 2000. 32% is about one-third. Now, we lost a lot of those manufacturing jobs before the year 2000, But now, remember, you've got the Bush administration, that's Republican. That's 8 years of Republican rule. They didn't do anything to stop this offshoring or outsourcing. And then it was the Clinton administration that really gave it its goose. Clinton was the guy that endorsed this World Trade, WTO program. I want to remind you people now that in 1992, remember that little guy from Texas whose ears kind of stick out? His name was Ross Perot. You remember that? And he told you in 1992, if you keep doing this, you're going to destroy your economy. That's right. Ross Perot. He told you. And did you elect Ross Perot? No, no, no. You elected Bill Clinton. And he gave you the WTO, remember? And CAFTA and NAFTA. All right. So if you think the Democrats are over here working for you and on your side, I think you got your head up the wrong end here, partner. And if you think the Republicans are over here working on your team, I just rest my case with that statistic right there. The United States lost 32%, one-third of its manufacturing jobs since 2000, and that's under Bush. And we're losing them at the same rate and faster. Faster. Obama has not done one thing now to even slow down. Not even slowing down. It's speeding up. Factories are closing at a more rapid rate than under Clinton and Bush, under Obama. Now, I don't know where the limit is, and I'm not here telling you who to vote for. I'm just giving you the facts. And I'm telling you that clear back in the Carter administration, this was going on because I personally received a letter from the SBA, and they were selling me on the idea of moving my manufacturing plant to Mexico to the free trade zone and offered me twice what my company ultimately sold for to do it. They said, we'll loan you the money. Was my company worth $500,000 in 1978? Not by the stretch of your imagination in any direction. Not by the stretch of any of your imagination was my company worth that kind of money. And they offered me the deal, and I turned it down. Now, number 14, in 2001, the United States ranked fourth in the world in per capita broadband internet use. Today, it ranks number 15. Now, there were 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production in 1950. They're still there today, such as automobile production, coal production, aluminum production, aircraft production, automobile production, and so on. And America was number one in all 15 in 1950. Today, we are not number one in any of those 15. And just taking a look here at something that's brand new, you know, we Americans invented broadband. We invented the internet. And today, we rank number 15th in the world. All right, number 15. Manufacturing employment in the United States computer industry is actually lower in the year 2010 than it was in 1975. More Americans were employed in the computer industry in 1975 than are employed in the industry today in 2010, and it was Americans that invented it. But boys and girls, there's an agenda out here. And the bankers, the politicians, the preachers, and the businessmen of America have an agenda, and it doesn't include you. It doesn't include me. We can pay the taxes. We can buy these goods and services that are being manufactured and produced somewhere else. You can buy your cell phone, but it isn't going to be manufactured by an American. You can buy a Buick automobile, but it's not going to be manufactured in America. You can buy a Ford Ranger, but it's not going to be made here. Now, you're not going to change that by voting for Barack Obama or anybody else. I don't believe that for a minute. In fact, a little later on, I'm going to show you here a fellow by the name of Robert Chapman. Writes a paper called The International Forecaster. In the September 29th, 2010 issue, under the section U.S. Markets, he pointed out a factoid over here that I'm going to share with you. He said, the average newsletter writer or reporter does not understand the economic dilemma that the United States is in. There's been nothing like this over the past 500 to 1,000 years. That's about how often a worldwide economic collapse occurs. About every 500 to 1,000 years. He says that's what's coming. That's what we're in. That's what's occurring right in front of your eyeball. Now, the fact that it takes about 5 years or 10 years to go through this economic collapse, we've only been in this program, you know, since December of 2007. It was in September, remember, of 2008, the month after the Olympics, the very next month that the thing collapsed. We went into recession in December of 2007. The thing collapsed in September of 2008. So you're only talking about this collapse now, 2009, 2010. We've been at it 24 months. It took 42 months from October of 1929 until March of 1933 to reach the bottom the last time. 3.5 years. We still have another 18 months to go before we reach the bottom. And that's assuming that we can do it as fast as we did it in the last Great Depression. And depression's where we're headed. Although I heard the other day, came over the news, and they said, hey, you know that recession that we had? Well, it ended in June of 2009. And I said to myself, have these people taken leave of their senses? I mean, have we gone mad? Are we suffering from the terminal stupids? No. Officially, the way this game is played is there's a quarter, like January, February, and March, that's quarter one. Then you got April, May, and June, that's quarter two. And then there's July, August, and September, quarter three. And then there's October, November, and December, that's quarter four. To have a recession, you have to have a minus growth for two consecutive quarters. So if you had growth in the first quarter and a negative growth in the second quarter, positive growth in the third quarter, negative growth in the fourth quarter, positive growth in the first quarter of the following year, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, you would never have a recession. To have a recession, you have to have two quarters of negative growth. Now, in order to end a recession, you just need one quarter of positive growth. See how simple that is? I mean, these guys manipulate the numbers and set up rules over here that are nowhere near reality. And then they bandy that about, and they teach us that, and they preach that to us in the Wall Street Journal, and we pick it up and believe it, and we practice that. But it doesn't have anything to do with reality. All right, now, the offshoring and the outsourcing of jobs and the tinkering with the statistics, for instance, they tell us that the unemployment rate today in the United States is 9.6%. And they're telling us the truth. And unemployment is gauged by six criteria. It's U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, and U6. There are six indices for computing total unemployment. To compute the unemployment statistics that they banty about to us every night on the news is U5. U5 is the measurement of the number of people who drew an unemployment check last week. If you're drawing an unemployment check, you are unemployed. You're a part of that 9.6%. U6, that's the number of people who are unemployed that are not drawing an unemployment check because their unemployment benefits ran out. And then there's U4, U3, U2, and U1, which I can't tell you off the top of my head what they measure, but I do remember these last two. Now, here's what the real unemployment rate is in the United States. In a poll recently conducted, they talked to 1,500 households coast to coast and asked this question: is there anybody in your household who is looking for a job or who is underemployed? That is, he's a college professor who's working at McDonald's. And the answer was 28% of the households responded yes. Now, I have to tell you, if you called my household and asked me that question, between my wife, myself, and my two sons, we would say, no, we're fully employed, we're doing our thing, and there's nobody unemployed here. But in 28% of households in America, the answer is yes. Now, that tells you that the real unemployment rate is 28%. Now, if you add in U1, U2, U3, U4, U5, and U6, the correct number is 21.625%. Last number I saw here in the forecaster. You know, it's just a matter of how do you want to count this thing up? And the way the government counts it, they count it so that it looks best for them with an election coming up. Number 16, the printed circuit boards are used in tens of thousands of different products. Asia now produces 84% of them worldwide. Did you get that? In these printed circuit boards that go into these computers, Asia now produces 84% of them. I suppose that the 16% that's left over is divided between South America, Europe, and the United States. I suppose that you Europeans are having the same problem competing with South Korea, Japan, and China that we are. Again, we didn't have that problem before we had international free trade, the World Trade Organization, CAFTA, NAFTA. We didn't have that problem. When we had policies in place that required, if you want to sell your product in the United States, you produce it here. And you want to sell your product in France, you produce it here. Okay, I don't have any problem with that. If you want to sell Napa Valley wine in France, I think the French should protect their local producers. At the same time, giving French people the opportunity to taste American wine. But I don't think that the French should all become unemployed overnight like we have here in America so that they can accommodate the Napa Valley wine growers or Cesar Chavez, you know, and the agricultural workers. After all, they've got a market to protect themselves. And I don't mind, you know, if I buy something that comes from overseas, I don't mind paying a premium for it. Now, it just so happens that when I go into a store and I buy something, it's always from overseas and there's no premium. Let me tell you a little story here. This is number 20. The other day, I had four jacks here, 12-ton jacks for moving stuff here on the farm. And over the years, all four of these jacks, and especially in the last few months, I had a big container out here and I needed to move it. And I moved it with my four jacks, but it weighed about, I don't know, 35, 40 tons. And it blew the seals on these four jacks. So I took these four jacks in to get them rebuilt. And I took them into a hydraulic store in Springfield and said, here's these four jacks. And the first thing they said, are these foreign jacks? I said, no, they're made in America. I've had them for about 25 years. Last time that they were rebuilt was probably 20 years ago, 15 anyway. And I've used them quite a bit, and now they're leaking, you know, all over the place, and they don't work right, and so I want you to rebuild them. And so the last time I rebuilt them, I think I paid 20 years ago, I think I paid about $50 per jack to have new seals put in them. And I'm prepared to pay $50 a jack, probably $75 a jack now, you know, things have been going up. But I'd rebuild those rather than buy new ones. And so after about 3 weeks, I went back into Springfield, happened to be in Springfield, stopped in, and I said, hey, got my jacks ready? And they said, nope, we don't. You see, Mr. Gordon, these jacks are so old, we can't get replacement parts for them anymore. These companies no longer manufacture jacks in this country. They have moved to China and other places. And I said to the man, well, okay, if you can't rebuild these jacks, do you have any jacks to sell? He said, yes. We can sell you a 12-ton jack for $128. And I said, okay, I'll take four. And he says, oh, well, we don't have four jacks. We have to order them. You see, we don't keep those in stock. They don't sell, you know, we don't sell very many of those. And I said, well, why don't you sell them? He said, well, because over here across town, there's a store, and they just sell Chinese jacks, and you can buy a brand new jack for about $35. And I said, wait a minute, let me see if I understand this. You handle American jacks, but you don't have any jacks to sell. You only order them. Yep, that's us. Yep. And these jacks that you're going to order for me cost $128. He said, yep, that's right. But I said, I can go over here across town, and I can buy a Chinese jack for $35, about one-fourth what you're going to charge me, and they've got them in stock. Yep. That's exactly right. And then when they go haywire, you don't fix them. You just throw them away and go buy a new jack for $35 because we're going to charge you $75 to rebuild these jacks. I said, now let me see if I get this straight. I can go over here to this Chinese place and buy two jacks brand new for the same price that it's going to cost me to have one of my jacks rebuilt. He said, yep, that's the way it goes. And you can't rebuild my jack because the American companies are all out of business and there aren't any parts. Yep, that's the way that works. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to announce to you that that is unsustainable for Americans. Unsustainable. That isn't going to work forever. Now, I, for one, I'm willing to pay the $128 for the American jack. I just don't want to wait 3 weeks to get it. So here's what I did. I went over to the other store, and I walked in, and I said, do you have any jacks here, hydraulic jacks? He says, oh, yeah, aisle three or whatever. I went over there, and I looked down, and there were no 12-ton jacks. But they did have two 20-ton jacks. So I reached down and I pulled out the two 20-ton jacks, and they were $36.95. Two 20-ton jacks. 8 tons bigger than the ones that I've got, that, by the way, can't be rebuilt now. So I took those two up to the counter, and I said, well, I really need four of these. And he said, well, we'll just go back and get you some more. So they went back in the back, and they pulled out two more jacks and brought them up there and sold me four jacks for $36.95. Plus tax, you know. 36.95 times four. It cost me $147.80 plus tax to buy four jacks that are about, not quite 50%, but about, you know, 30% bigger. And what happens when they go haywire? You just throw them away and go buy new ones because you can't pay somebody to take them apart and fix them for less than the $36.95. It's going to cost you $75. How do you like that? Number 17, the United States spends about $3.90 on Chinese goods for every $1 that the Chinese spend on American goods. I mentioned that one to you a little earlier, remember? It's about 4-1. One prominent economist is projecting that the Chinese economy will be 3 times larger than the U.S. economy by the year 2040. And so the United States is declining, and the Chinese are on the ascent. It's not because of anything that the Chinese are doing better than us. It's that we have just totally capitulated to them. We're not competing with them. Our jack manufacturers aren't competing with the Chinese. Our Stanley company isn't competing with the Chinese. We have joined with them in the destruction of our own nation and our own economy. I can't for the life of me figure out why Americans keep voting for the politicians who have brought this kind of destructive economic policy on America. It doesn't make any sense, but that's what we've done. And I'm not sure that the average American understands it, which is why I told you early on, then voting isn't going to solve the problem. Voting is for the purposes of making a change, correcting the problem, putting somebody into office like a Ron Paul who says, let's solve the problem and here's what we do to do that. And Americans, no, we don't want to do that. We want to vote for Bill Clinton. We want to vote for George Bush. We want to vote for Barack Obama. And then number 19, the U.S. Census Bureau says that 43.6 million Americans are now living in poverty. And according to them, that's the highest number of poor Americans in the 51 years that records have been kept. Americans are getting poorer. Well, the policies that we're following guarantee it. As I showed you early on, the Dell company is going to spend $100 billion building manufacturing plants in China. They're going to spend a dollar in the United States. And the one manufacturing company that they've got here, they're going to close it and move it to China. 900 Americans will lose their jobs. And that doesn't make any sense. Now, we're going to vote for a Republican or a Democrat who have demonstrated over the last 30 years, that is from 1980, 1990, 2000, 2010, over the last 30 years, that they are committed to closing American manufacturing plants and moving those plants offshore. These two political parties have worked as hard as anybody can to accomplish that goal, and they have accomplished that. And it's not only working, it is accelerating. All right, now, if that's what we want to stick with the same program. I recommend Barack Obama. Vote Democratic. If you want to change that, the only other choice you have is the Republicans, right? Okay. Well, they're the ones that accelerated the program from the Clinton era through the Bush program. I find it hard to believe that changing from Team A to Team B is going to solve your problem. But boys and girls, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Why don't you get out there and vote? Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.